Earlier this month, another enormous garbage patch was discovered, this time in the Atlantic Ocean. It's been described as a giant plastic soup created when garbage is pulled into a swirling vortex by a multitude of currents, and its discovery prompted one environmentalist to say that our plastic footprint has become even more of a threat to the planet than our carbon footprint. Managing and perhaps rethinking how we use, reuse, and recycle plastics is more important than ever, and it's our subject on today's edition of Please Explain. Joining me now is Eric Goldstein, Senior Attorney and New York City Environmental Director at the National Resources Unnatural Resources Defense Council. He teaches environmental law and is the co-author of the New York Environment book. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Len. Good afternoon.
Is plastic always an entirely man-made substance?
Well, it's not necessarily entirely, but for the most part, plastics are synthetic materials that could be molded into many different shapes and sizes under heat and pressure. And the vast number of plastics comes from petroleum or natural gas. And there are significant consequences to that. There are, however, some plastics that can be made from natural materials like plants, like sugarcane waste is a good example. And that's obviously a direction we need to move in if we want to have a sustainable planet at the same time we provide conveniences for our consumers.
Well, since most of it is from petroleum, and then creating it requires a substantial effort, an enormous measure of natural resources, including natural gas, why are they so ubiquitous?
Well, they do provide a service in that they are durable. They can be fashioned into many, many different shapes. And they've ended up replacing a lot of products. So in our post-World War II consumer society, there have been a wide range of uses for which plastics have filled the bill. Unfortunately, in many cases, we're using them for short periods of time, and the environmental problems that they create are with us for decades.
And there are a lot of different kinds of plastics, aren't there? In fact, if you just look at the numbers on the backs of some plastic objects, it's 1 through 7?
Right. There are many, many different kinds of plastic formulations. They all start with a binder, which is usually a synthetic resin, like polyvinyl chloride is one of those. And that's simply a long chain of molecules called polymers. And what differentiates the plastics is the initial resin they start with, and then things are added to the plastics. So manufacturers can add plasticizers that can add strength or flexibility to a particular plastic, or they could add fillers, which can give some plastics other properties like hardness or shock resistance. And then, of course, they'll add pigments that add colors to the plastics.
But one alone, like number one, polyethylene terephthalate, gets used for a whole bunch of different things. Soft
That's
drink
right.
water, salad dressing bottles, peanut butter and jam jars.
Yeah, even within those seven categories, there are many different uses. And essentially, that's part of the problem, is that those numbers, which were devised by the plastics industry to assist in recycling, in some way represent an oversimplification, because in some instances, even plastics within those same numerical categorizations can't easily be recycled together.
And there are some plastics that we can't recycle, like plastic grocery bags and other plastic bags. Are they within the seven categories?
They are within the seven. Maybe I'll give you a quick rundown of the seven so that your listeners will have that available. Plastic category number one is PET, and I'll use the abbreviations PET or PETE. That's soft drinks or soda bottles. Number two is HDPE, and those are milk jugs and bleach bottles. Number three is PVC, polyvinyl chloride. That's everything from window cleaner bottles to detergent bottles to food wrap to the coating you see, the rubber-like coating along wires. Number four, LDPE. Those are squeezable bottles, like squeezable ketchup bottles. Number five, PP, polypropylene. is everything from yogurt containers to straws. Number six, PS, polystyrene. Those are the famous clamshells, but they also use polystyrene in everything like CD cases. And number seven is the sort of catch-all for all other plastics.
The ones that are usually made are more what we might call bio-based plastics?
In some cases.
Now, why is some so difficult to recycle? For example, the plastic bags, which make up a high percentage of our garbage, around 7% or so.
Well, plastics as a whole are sort of in that range. But plastic bags are, once you get them to the proper facility, they're actually pretty simple to recycle. The difficulty in some places is that plastic bags can foul up the sorting equipment at a recycling facility. So they may get caught in the grates, and that's why a number of cities that have recycling programs for all plastics or most plastics often don't include plastic bags.
We're talking about plastics and plastic recycling on today's Please Explain with Eric Goldstein, a senior attorney and New York City environmental director at the Natural Resources Defense Council. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What's understood about how the different types of plastics break down? I've always thought that they don't simply degrade, and that plastics, more than other man-made products, can linger in landfills for hundreds of years. Is that true?
That's true, Len. And part of the advantage of plastics are their durability, but that's also a big part of their problem. So if they're in landfills, they often will break down mechanically into smaller pieces, but they won't degrade in a molecular sense. They'll remain as plastics. Same if they're in the ocean. And many of your listeners have no doubt heard about these giant garbage patches. There's the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which some people say is the size of Texas, that is located in the ocean, where whirlpools are created. You find plastics collecting, breaking down into smaller pieces but still remaining plastic, and they present a significant problem to marine life. So not only are plastics a problem and an environmental nuisance here in the city, where they blow down the streets, they hang from the trees, they clutter our beaches, they clog our storm drains, but plastics in the marine environment are a significant threat to marine life, which frequently confuse them with food.
And as I said earlier, not just in the Pacific now, there's a big one in the Atlantic as well. But you said that they do break down. Does water break down those bags?
No. What they do is, if it's hard plastic, they will break down into smaller pieces. But their molecular composition won't change. And so that doesn't do very much except you know, you won't see plastic chairs floating in the Atlantic. You'll probably see smaller pieces of plastic floating down. The significant thing is they don't break down. They retain their chemical composition, and they present a variety of threats to marine life. There was just a story reported the other day in the Seattle paper of a whale that had beached on the West Coast, and it was found to have a whole host. They did an autopsy, and he was found to have a whole host of plastic bags that he swallowed, obviously in this case confusing the plastic bags with the jellyfish.
Now, if we have plastic containers or sandwich bags and the like, can we reuse them forever, or is there a time when we should be sure to recycle them?
Plastic bags, let's say shopping bags, can be reused hundreds of times. If you are using a small plastic bag as a food container, somewhere down the line after a number of reuses, you may want to decide that you don't want the leftover mayonnaise in there and you may want to recycle it. But for non-food purposes, there's no reason why plastics can't be reused many, many times. And the big challenge we have with plastic bags can be solved simply if we were to take our plastic bags and reuse them again which is even better than recycling.
There are plastic bag recycling containers in supermarkets in New York City. How are they being recycled?
Those plastic bags are collected by the distributors of plastic bags that bring the virgin plastic bags to the supermarkets, and they take those recycled bags back. They ultimately get incorporated into the feedstock for remanufacture, and so they are often becoming plastic bags again. The big problem with the New York City plastic bag recycling and with New York State plastic bag recycling, they all have the same approach, which is asking consumers to bring plastic bags back to the supermarkets or the large chain stores, is they're not getting very much of the plastics. And in California, less than 5% of the bags are being returned through these kinds of programs. So it was a good start, but clearly additional steps are going to be taken if we're going to curb the ubiquitous and ever-growing amount of plastic bags that are in our environment.
Well, we have a recycling plan in New York, which some people say is pretty good. But then didn't Mayor Bloomberg discontinue it for a while? For economic reasons, he said?
We've had a recycling program here in the city since 1989. And at the start of the Bloomberg administration, the collection of glass and plastics was suspended for a year or a year and a half, depending upon which of those two products we're talking about. The original thought was that the city would save tens of millions of dollars by suspending those recycling collections. That proved not to be the case. And under the leadership of the city council and Speaker Chris Quinn, the mayor and his staff rethought that, and fortunately they agreed to restore the program. So we now have weekly collections once again for paper, metals, glass, and plastic.
So, okay, we get those collections. What happens after you throw your plastic bottle or container into a recycling bin? Who takes it away, and where does it go?
Well, it is collected by the City Sanitation Department, which provides recycling service on a weekly basis to all city households. From there, the white sanitation trucks go to one of three facilities that is run by a private company called Sims Metal Management, and that is the recycling company that got a 20-year contract to handle the city's metals, glass, and plastic and convert them into recyclables.
And what do they do? They get
those products ultimately to their Jersey City facility, where they're separated into those seven categories, or in this case, category one and two, all soda bottles or the PET bottles or milk jugs, category two, and they're further separated according to color. So they've got three sorts, and then those plastics are baled and prepared for transportation. They're loaded onto a truck. They're taken to customers elsewhere in the United States. There's a strong market both for the number one plastics, the PET bottles, and the HDPE, the number two bottles. And there, they're washed. They're further processed to get off the caps and the labels. They're turned into flakes, and they're extruded into pellets. And from there, they go into a final manufacturing process where they're converted back, often bottle to bottle, into new bottles, not for food purposes, but for other purposes. So many of the bleach-type bottles or detergent bottles that you purchase have been made with recycled plastic in them. And the same is true for used motor oil. Motor oil containers are also recycled plastic.
So the things that we get food in are, in effect, virgin plastic. And then when they're recycled, they go into things that where they don't come in contact with food.
For the most part, that's true. The Food and Drug Administration obviously has a close watch on the materials that go into food and food packaging. And so there are efforts underway to find ways to use recycled content in some food packaging. But largely, for the most part, that's still developing.
In other countries, we see the recycling into a lot more different categories. Would that help? Would that bring down the cost of recycling in New York?
Well, certainly it would, and the markets for recyclables has matured. Markets for plastics are like markets for every other commodity, and over the last 20 years, the markets for recyclables have matured around the country, and that's why you see other cities, Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, a whole host of cities have begun or have had underway for several years collecting all of the plastics, and the markets seem to be strongest for the plastics 1 and 2, but there are markets for some of these other commodities as well. And like every other market, if suppliers and manufacturers know that they have a certain supply of materials, that helps foster the markets.
Does plastic recycling in New York City pay for itself?
The city's recycling program is cost-effective with and is essentially the same as the city's program to burn or landfill its wastes. In other words, according to an independent study completed 2 years ago by DSM Consultants, the city is essentially paying the same amount to within 6% to get rid of its recyclables as to get rid of its waste through landfilling and incineration. Of course, the calculations like that don't take into account the enormous environmental benefits of recycling: less energy consumed, fewer air pollutants and water pollutants, reduced global warming emissions, and the fact that recycling creates more jobs and more economic activity per ton of waste disposed of than you get if you send your waste to a landfill or an incinerator.
But we are selling this plastic, although not making back all the money it costs us to collect it.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, Len, but in shorthand version, the costs per ton to dump our unrecycled trash at an out-of-state landfill are averaging about $96 a ton. The cost to bring our recyclable metals, glass, and plastic to the Sims facility that we were just talking about. And by the way, they're building a brand new facility on the Brooklyn waterfront in Sunset Park. That cost is $68 a ton. So it's $96 a ton if we are exporting it. It's $68 a ton if we're dropping it at a recycling place. So you would think we're making $30 a ton. Unfortunately, it still is costing us more to collect our recyclables than it is to collect our regular trash. That's why the city council proposal to increase the materials that are placed out from recycling makes economic sense. If we collect more materials in our recycling truck, we'll bring down those costs of collection per ton, and every ton of wastes that we recycle will be costing city taxpayers less than every ton of waste we have to send to an out-of-state landfill or incinerator.
I'm talking with Eric Goldstein about plastics and plastic recycling. He's a senior attorney and New York City environmental director at the Natural Resources Defense Council. He teaches environmental law. He's also the co-author of the New York Environment book. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send me any emails because I have no access to the email, so I can't check those as well. But the other two ways are great. And if you don't want to go on the air but you still don't want to leave a comment, you can always speak to a producer and tell them what you want to know about. Okay, once more, 212-433-9692. We'll be right back after this. And we are back with our Please Explain look at plastics and plastics recycling. I'm sure you've had you have a lot of questions yourself because everybody I know has asked me at one time or another, what do you think happens to that plastic after they pick it up? My guest is Eric Goldstein, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Margaret from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Yeah. Hi. Thank you, Leonard. I have a question and also a comment about potato chip bags I can make after my question. The question is that some things don't have a number, like the plastic rim that's on the Häagen-Dazs ice cream container or soda bottle, the top on the bottle. Now, the electronic recyclers came into the city about a year and a half ago, and they actually took those things from me and said they were going to shred them, but they're not coming back anytime scheduled. Do we have any place for shredding here?
Regarding electronics recycling, the city council passed a law several years ago requiring manufacturers to set up systems that would be convenient for all residents to take back electronics like computers and television sets. The electronics industry has challenged that law in court, so the program is not yet fully in place, but we hope soon to be able to have a convenient electronics recycling program because, surprisingly, it's the largest growing part of the waste stream, and many of the chemical constituents are toxic and end up leaching in landfills, or we don't want to burn those things in incinerators. So right now, your best bet is a voluntary program. There are a series of them that are being held around the city. You can contact the Lower East Side Ecology Center with respect to electronics.
Okay, thank you for your call.
Hello?
Yeah. I have to move on to another call because we have lots of calls and very little time. Thank you so much for your call. John from Jersey Shore, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Traditionally, we've all known that you can't take a plastic bottle and turn it into another food-grade container, but I want to know if your guest has heard about some new technology that does allow that. I learned through the Container Recycling Institute that there's some new technology, so you can take a PET, you know, like a Coke bottle type of milk jug type of container, and you can turn it into a food-grade container once again. Does your guest know anything about that?
Well, again, I'm not a chemist, but we have been made aware of those new technologies. Many of them are on the cutting edge. It's likely that some will ultimately succeed. From an environmental standpoint, of course, the best thing is using a reusable bottle, let's say a stainless steel bottle, to be carrying your beverages around rather than a plastic water bottle, for example. But yes, they are working on ways of ensuring that recycled PET bottles can be used again in food applications.
Okay,
and just to follow up on the refillable, it's also my understanding that 7% of all the Coke sold worldwide, Coca-Cola, is sold in a refillable PET plastic bottle. So it's sort of like the old refillable beer bottles or soda bottles we used to have that were glass. Coke, you know, obviously in other countries, Coke is using a refillable plastic bottle that goes back to the factory and gets sanitized. That avoids this whole process of recycling, at least somewhat.
Yeah, the old way in this case where you had local bottlers, so you'd minimize your energy costs and you'd send the thick glass bottle back for washing and reuse, certainly was environmentally friendly.
Jane in New Jersey asks, are compostable plastic and biodegradable plastic an actual thing, or is this an instance of greenwashing?
Well, there are. That's a tricky question because there are some bio-based plastics that are now being manufactured from things like sugar cane waste or rice straw or wheat straw that are, in fact, compostable and work. But there are also some plastics that are being called biodegradable, and in those cases, the manufacturers are just adding some product like cornstarch so that the plastics will break down but not be able to be composted because they will retain their chemical properties as plastic resins. So it's a growing area. It's an area that we hope plastics move to with more natural bio-based products, but not yet in full production everywhere, and there are, of course, folks who are going to be calling their products biodegradable, and that will only confuse the public more.
Now, the kinds of plastic bags that are used in frozen vegetables or on plastic wrap are not recyclable. They just go into landfills?
Well, again, the plastic bags are usually plastic number 4 or plastic number 2. And they are both, in theory, recyclable. And there's no reason why they cannot ultimately be recycled. Right now, the vast majority of them are being thrown out. And so, yes, they are ending up in landfills or in one of the 2 incinerators that New York City uses.
Well, they're on a list of what you should not recycle that I got from the city. So,
yeah. Let's just keep in mind, Len, there's a difference between what you should place in your recycling bin under the New York City program and what is physically able to be recycled. And the city program currently collects plastics number 1 and 2, and even then they define it as milk jugs and bottles and things like that. One of the big advances that the city council is hoping to make is to end the confusion of which plastics are recyclable and which aren't. Speaker Quinn has introduced new legislation that would make all rigid plastics recyclable, and it's our understanding that the city's recycler, Sims Metal Management, once they open their new Sunset plant, will be working to find a way to handle all of those rigid plastics for recycling.
We go now to Josephine from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, you just answered one of my questions because I'm in charge of the recycling in my building, and I took a seminar with the sanitation department, and they made it very clear that only 1 and 2 were to be recycled and no caps at all. But now I have another question, and that is these curlicue fluorescent lights, because they do contain mercury. Currently, I tell people to take them to a hardware store on Broadway near 96th Street. Supposedly, they recycle them.
But they're not plastic. That's a whole other matter, isn't it? That's another recycling problem?
It is another recycling problem. It's a common one, and there's an easy answer. Another aspect of this city council legislation would make household hazardous waste collections easier and more convenient. And certainly one thing that would be useful is for manufacturers or retailers to take back some of these hazardous products. There's a demonstration program proposed in the council legislation that would set up voluntary collections of paint, and light bulbs certainly too ought to fit in that household hazardous waste category. You're right not to be throwing it out in the regular trash.
A caller asks, how much pollution does the recycling process cause? And I'm going to add to that, can you explain monomer recycling and thermal depolymerization, which seem to require intense processing that costs a great deal?
Yeah. The whole process of producing plastic produces a large amount of pollution. Much of the pollution is created upstream. I mean, just to get to the point where you're manufacturing a plastic product, you've got to extract oil or natural gas from an underground deposit somewhere in the world. You've got to transport that oil, often through a tanker, to a refinery. There, the petroleum is broken down into grades, and the lighter grades are sent to yet another plastic refinery. And there, the different grades are sorted by molecular composition, and they form these plastic pellets. And that turns into ultimately everything from ketchup bottles to dashboards to sneakers. But the whole process of transporting that oil and natural gas, the energy that's used to crack and manufacture the plastic resins, the energy that it takes to send the plastics to the retailer, those are the hidden environmental costs of the plastics process, and they produce a significant amount of air pollution too. So most of the pollution for products like plastics, and indeed for many consumer goods, takes place upstream before the consumer purchases it from the retailer.
Now, a couple of listeners have written in with questions that I think are related. One asks, number 6 PS containers that you get meat in the supermarket, if you put it in the recycling bag, you get a $25 ticket. Why? It has a number 6 on the bottom. And then another person asks, what happens to the plastics that shouldn't be recycled or that the New York City program can't recycle? but get put into the blue bags anyway.
Number six, just because a plastic product has a number on the back does not mean that it's recyclable. And again,
but they're putting meat in it.
I'm sorry?
But they are putting meat in it, so I would be rather suspicious. Shouldn't I be suspicious of it?
Again, what the symbol on the back, the numerical symbol, means, created by the plastics industry, means that in theory, if you are sorting out these materials for recycling, this number six might go in the pile with other number sixes. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will be recycled. It doesn't mean it should be recycled. And it doesn't even mean that all number sixes can be usefully recycled together. So in this case, in New York City currently, they're not collecting number six. Polystyrene is a particular problem because there are hundreds of thousands of school trays that are used and made of polystyrene that are used once and thrown out every day here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
This is a difficult to recycle plastic because it's so lightweight, it blows everywhere. And public advocate de Blasio has recently, just I think on Earth Day, announced a new initiative to get the public schools and government agencies to phase out the use of polystyrene in their offices and in their purchases.
We have just time for a part of a call. Arthur from Manhattan, can you make it quick?
Yeah, I'm a restaurateur. We put out our bags at night, every night, either blue bags or our white bags for cans and bottles, and then the regular garbage. And the carters just come by and throw it into the truck. It used to be that they would come by twice, but now they come by once. How does that get separated?
The commercial recycling system runs on a different operation from the city's residential program. In theory, those commercial wastes are sorted back at the materials recovery facility where the wastes are brought. We still need additional information about that. What we do know is the wastes that New Yorkers put out in their homes and apartments for recycling, those materials are being recycled. Commercial waste stream is more complicated, and as someone once said, we know more about what's happening on Pluto than we do with some aspects of our commercial waste.
Well, thank you for clearing up so much that we don't have to know what's going on in Pluto about this anyway, although we're still arguing over whether Pluto is a planet or not. My great thanks to Eric Goldstein, Senior Attorney and New York City Environmental Director at the Natural Resources Defense Council, co-author of the New York Environment book. We've been talking about plastics and plastic recycling on today's Please Explain. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks very much, Lynn.